On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And joining me on the Commons today, we have Don Shellhart. Don is an attorney who's very much on our side in the HOA arena, but his heart and soul really belongs with an organization that he founded and is the president of, Hams for Action. Don, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, it's nice to be here. I'm getting to feel like an old hand on your show.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have people who know, you know, who are regulars and who come back periodically, and so that's always a good thing.
Well, I am delighted to be here. You can put me on anytime you want.
I like that. But we do actually have something that we really need to talk about. Now, the last time you were on, you were trying to get some legislation passed for hams who happen to live in HOAs. And you did a lot of work on that. Now you're going to tell us what happened, right?
Yes. I'm going to give basically an update. First, I'd like to say, hello, world. I love the idea of having a global audience. Anyway, beyond that, let me recount the situation. As most of you probably know, the majority, vast majority of HOAs in the United States prohibit any kind of amateur radio service antennas in the neighborhoods. Now, obviously, that's a problem for the amateur radio operators, also known as hams, but it's a problem for the neighborhoods as well, because without some kind of amateur radio service antennas, you can't have amateur radio service operations. And without amateur radio service operations, you can't have the emergency communications coverage that the amateur radio service typically provides. Whether you're talking about the tsunami that hit Asia several years back, or the nuclear power plant meltdown at Chernobyl, or Hurricane Katrina, typically in major disasters, the first people to get on the air with information about the impacted area are hams. That's because they generally have battery-powered radio antennas and battery-powered, you know, radios. And
These are battery-powered?
Oh, well, mostly. They don't have to be. But generally, the radios are battery-powered.
Okay.
Or at least they have backup batteries so that the hams can be on the air for several hours, even if the power is lost. And that is absolutely essential in any kind of a disaster, because you almost always have a power loss associated with it.
Well, you know, when 911 happened and the Pentagon was hit over here, it was impossible. Phone lines were out and cell phones were out. So there was no communication.
Well, where the hams can help is, well, probably the most important function is they can get information out, you know, to the first responders and so on. You know, our neighborhood's been hit. We have three houses on fire, whatever. Normally, like you said, the cell phone lines are tied up. The telephone lines are probably, other telephone lines may be down. There's no TV, there's no commercial radio or non-commercial radio for that matter. You know, I mean, all the standard communications are down. The only way to get that kind of information out, we've got this problem here, this specific problem in this specific location, is with ham radio. Now, typically, I mean, there are some exceptions, but generally, when you have a major disaster, the power goes down, the cell phones are out. The landlines, if they're operating, are overloaded, and so on. So it's absolutely crucial to get that information out to the first responders as to where the problems are, the worst problems are.
Hey, let me interrupt you again here. Are all the emergency places equipped with HAM, for instance, fire stations, police departments, hospitals, do they all have HAM radios?
Well, that's a good point. Some of them do and some of them don't. But usually you can at least reach the national emergency authorities by HAM radio. And sometimes you can reach the local authorities too. And one thing you can do with HAM radios is that you can reach individual citizens who are outside the disaster area, and they can spread the word to the authorities there. I mean, you can, in a disaster, you have a, you can sometimes have very indirect lines of communication. I remember one that, which I was involved personally. I was working for the American Gas Association, was based at a time in Arlington, now it's based downtown. I was working there when the big Loma Prieta earthquake struck in the Bay Area. In fact, I just missed the earthquake myself by about 4 days. I had been visiting the area where the epicenter was located. Anyway, we had utilities from the Northern California area who were unable to get word to the federal authorities about what they needed to restore gas service and electric service and so on as quickly as possible. So they couldn't get through directly. The landlines were just jammed. And they would call me, well, and others, not just me, but they would call me at AGA, American Gas Association, and say, we need such and such for, San Jose. We need such and such for, blanking on the locations, Menlo Park, you know, whatever. This is the situation, this is what we need. And then we would get online, and we would call the feds, and the feds would call the state authorities, and all this information would flow roundabout.
And it would flow.
Excuse me?
But it would flow.
And, I mean, HAM communications might operate the same way. I mean, HAMs are pretty resourceful people. I mean, these are folks who have taught themselves how to operate this equipment. In a few cases, they built their own equipment. You know, they know what they're doing, and they're pretty adaptable. So generally, the information does get out one way or another, even if it has to go through a couple of different hands on the way to the people who need to know it the most. So that's one advantage of having the ham radios.
Okay, let me stop you. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting you. I really am sorry. But
well, it takes me a while to cover the point. And, probably the listeners can use a break to let it soak in anyway.
Well, I think I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, wait a minute. We've been focusing primarily on making sure that HOAs don't ban hams and that there's some way for a ham to be able to operate, and we're talking about the benefits of it. But should this be expanded to say that it would be a secondary form of information flow and that there should be ham operators, maybe even operated by volunteer hams, to go into local fire stations, police stations, whatever? Because when the lines are down, the lines are down. I mean, is there room here for a much broader plan?
I think there probably is. In fact, later in the conversation, if we don't run out of time, I'll talk about the possibility of expanding action on the HAM issue to action on HOA reform in general.
Okay.
But
I'll
shut up. We're all HAM, so that's where we're starting.
Okay.
And that's, it's probably because that's where the heart, that's our first priority. But also, sometimes when you've got a broad political agenda, you have to attack it in bite-sized increments. You can't get the political system to accept everything at once, so you start with what's most important to you or what's easiest to get through or whatever. But there's certainly room for hams to go to fire stations and so on. One of the big problems is that unless the hams can practice at home, they get rusty or they don't get started in the first place. So I mean, like, if you want a ham to be able to go to that fire station and help out there, you've got to let that ham, in most cases anyway, have a home radio, home ham radio, so he or she can practice and get some fun out of the hobby and so on. You can't just say, well, get trained, get your license for this, and then just sit on your training for 10 years until we have a crisis. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's one of the problems. People sometimes say, well, can't they just, you know, do they really need to be in the HOA when they clock in, or can they just go to the fire station or whatever? But the two problems are, first, you know, like I said, they're probably not going to have the expertise in the first place unless they have an opportunity to practice regularly. Just that, you know, it's just human nature. People aren't going to study for something to be ready for something that may or may not ever happen. There's got to be some day-to-day training. The other thing is that if the disaster is sizable enough, they may not be able to get to the fire station. I mean, like, talk about Hurricane Katrina. You know, do you want to hop in your car and drive to the fire station a mile away in the middle of Hurricane Katrina? Or would you rather sit in your own apartment and do what you can from there?
Don, I totally agree with you, but what I'm saying, the thing I was trying to point out was that if you're sitting in your own house in Katrina and you're having a problem, broadcasting to the fire station that you need help when there's no one there to receive it is not going to do you a whole hell of a lot of good. So if there's equipment there and someone there who can get that information and relay it to the fire department and say, by the way, Don's stuck in his house on Bourbon Street. Would you please get to him? He needs helicopter, he needs a boat, he needs, you know, whatever the deal is. But if you're just blowing it out there, hoping someone's going to catch it, wouldn't it be better to make sure that someone is there to receive that information?
Okay, I see what you're saying. You know, maybe there should be a requirement that fire stations and police stations have hams, or ham radios, anyway, someone trained to use them. I'm not opposed to that. We're just going to the starting point and saying we need to get the hams active and trained in the neighborhoods.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we can get from there. And the experience does suggest that when there are transmissions in a disaster, they do get out. Even if they don't get to the local fire station, say, you know, they get to a fire station 50 miles away that then tells the local authorities. You know, again, like the situation with the American Gas Association and the earthquake, often the communication's very roundabout. And, you know, people called me at AGA because the long-distance lines weren't jammed. The local lines were jammed. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay.
And so they called me in Washington, and then Washington called Sacramento, and Sacramento called San Francisco, and, you know, and so on and so forth. And that sort of thing can get, one way or another, it gets done. But I'm certainly not averse to a requirement, in addition to what we do in the neighborhoods, that police stations and fire stations should have ham equipment.
It would seem to me that would get the message out a lot quicker than having to go all over the world, basically, and bouncing it back and forth till it came back round circle to a mile down the road.
Okay, I see that. I'm just saying, you know, let's do that in addition.
Yeah, absolutely in addition to. Absolutely, but you have to have the hams in the neighborhoods because they're the ones who are going to be broadcasting the information to and from the neighborhood. But you need someone locally who's going to be able to receive it as well. Otherwise, you're going to go through this long circuitous route that you just described.
Yes. Okay. Before I forget, too, I wanted to mention the other half of the equation, which is getting information in. The hams can get information out, but they can also get information in.
Right.
For example, you've had an earthquake, and you're it's in the Cascadia subduction zone off the coast of Washington State and Oregon and some of Northern California. The predictions are that's probably going to happen in the next 20 years, and it might be worse than the next big earthquake in California. So, okay, so you're in the, let's assume you're along the Oregon coast, you're along the Washington State coast. The earthquake hits, your power goes down, your communications go down. Now, what you meant, you know there's been an earthquake, you know, roads are, some of the roads need repair, but what you may not know is that a major earthquake in the Cascadia subduction zone will almost certainly be offshore, and will generate a major tidal wave. So in that scenario, the authorities need to get information to the affected neighborhoods as quickly as possible that a tidal wave is coming. And they may have anywhere from 30 minutes to 60 minutes to get the word out, maybe not even that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, assuming the radio stations are down, the TV stations are down, the phones aren't working, the best bet to get that information out to the affected neighborhoods is to get the local hams on the horn. And they'll probably be on the horn because they're going to run for their radios the minute the disaster strikes.
Right.
But you see what I'm saying. You know, you could really save a lot of lives in that situation. Now, maybe most people are going to sit there and say, well, we just had an earthquake. It might have been offshore, so maybe there'll be a tidal wave and so on. I mean, there are people who can figure that out. But, you know, you're dealing with the shock of an earthquake in the first place, and a lot of people aren't type of guy like me who will study what happens in earthquakes and what happens in nuclear power plant meltdowns. I just have that sort of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so there might be really a lot of people who need to get to high ground fast and can't get that word unless somebody uses the hands.
Okay.
And I hope I'm making my point there.
You are. I'm just thinking that it probably needs to be a little bit broader. Because there seems to be a lot of wasted time going around the circuitous
yeah.
route. If you're going to try to educate the numbskulls who sit in Washington, then you might as well try to give them the entire picture.
Okay.
And say, okay, guys, you know, here's the story, you know, here's the picture. I'm going to draw it for you, and you need to understand what
yeah.
we're talking about.
Well, I'll mention another thing which I think is really impressive. And it's another case of information coming in rather than information going out.
Mm-hmm.
During during Hurricane Katrina, the president wanted to contact the mayor of New Orleans to discuss emergency action.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't get through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the phone lines were down. Even at the military bases within 100 miles of New Orleans,
yeah.
the communications were down. Now, that's scary information to me. I was thinking there, if I were Iran, I would be very interested in the fact that all these sophisticated military communications went down in an earthquake. But anyway, that's another thing to worry about later. The immediate problem was how to get through to get the president talking with the mayor of New Orleans. And what he did was they called a ham. We got a ham radio, and they contacted a ham in Tennessee, who passed on the message to a ham in Mississippi, who passed on the message to a ham in Louisiana, and the lines of communication went back and forth through the hams.
Yeah.
You know, this is the President of the United States. He couldn't get through even on the military channels.
Right.
He had to use ham radio. So now you have these idiotic HOAs saying, well, I'm sorry, I shouldn't use that word idiotic, but I really think it.
No,
it's self-destructive behavior. Because they're risking the lives of their own residents. They are risking their lives, and they've been told they're risking their lives, and they just don't listen. So I'm sorry, I'm just getting a bit on my soapbox here.
You know what? You get me on my soapbox, Don, you'll never get me off again.
I believe that.
But idiotic, idiotic is not quite the word that I would use to describe the people who run HOAs. Criminal stupidity might come a little bit closer, but anyway.
Yes, criminal criminal negligence, I mean, it does occur to me that, you know, putting on my lawyer hat for a minute, that someday some of these HOAs may get sued for loss of life and property because they didn't allow ham radio antennas.
Ham radio, I haven't heard of one for a ham radio, but they have been sued for some of their numbskull, stupid criminal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just idiotic.
Well, the final piece of the of this particular puzzle is that we are not coming in there at hams for action anyway. We are not coming in there and saying we want antennas to be allowed no matter what their height. I mean, a lot of people in HOAs, they think ham radio antennas, and they think about these folks out in the country who have 150-foot antennas. And, you know, that's the norm out in the country. But, you know, we realize that HOAs have some concern about aesthetics, and we don't need huge antennas for disaster relief. So what we've been proposing so far is in the range of 20 to 30 feet and 35 feet sometimes. You know, it's a little bit of disagreement about what's the minimum antenna you need, but basically 20 feet and, 20 feet to 35 feet is sort of the ballpark estimate for what we'd like the HOAs to allow. And, also, we could live with even 3-foot antennas, if necessary, but they would be better than nothing, but they don't have the quality that the larger ones do. But we do have window antennas. All you gotta do is put the antenna on the window frame. You can put it in a 3x3 window, and it'll get you some kind of coverage in an emergency. You know, it would be better to have a 20-foot antenna. But the thing is, these HOAs, they don't say, we don't want 150-foot antennas, we don't want 50-foot antennas, you know, we don't want 20-foot, you know, we don't want any antennas of any size whatsoever. And that's crazy. I mean, there's got to be a reasonable balance point, particularly when lives are at stake.
I've heard from people who've had them hidden in drain pipes. Along the side of drain pipes or in drain pipes in umbrella stands, not at all visible, and yet somehow the HOA finds out and they go absolutely crazy.
Well, I've walked you and the listeners through, you know, the basic situation here. I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure this out. It's not that complicated. And, you know, when nothing else will work, ham radio will probably work, one way or another. And if you ban ham radio, you are isolating your community to a major extent from the emergency communications network.
But we need to have...
The world we live in today, I mean, you've got natural disasters. I won't even get into man-made disasters, you know, terrorist nuclear weapons and all that kind of stuff. In the kind of world we live in today, it just makes no sense to allow no ham radio antennas at all. It's suicidal. Sorry, I didn't mean to get that extreme. But it is, ultimately, it's saying, I'm throwing my fate to the wind. I trust the emergency communications authorities so fully that I want to destroy any capacity my neighborhood may have to help itself.
Well, I think, you know, we have these rules, you see, and the people who tend to get on these boards tend to be rule lovers as long as they don't apply to them. And that's what they live for, is to enforce their rules, because heaven forbid that we should not abide by the rules. And
well,
the rules are stupid.
We're not against rules. You know, I mean, reasonable rules.
Anybody who knows me at all knows me well enough, knows that my motto in life is rules were made to be broken. So give me a rule and I will find a way to break it. If it makes no sense, it will be gone. If it makes sense, I'm okay with it. But most of these rules are there because somebody wants to enforce something. It doesn't matter whether it makes sense or not. They just want something to enforce.
Well, in terms of me as an individual, you are preaching to the choir, because I lived in Burke Center, and I lived in another development. I can't even remember the name of it, but it's right over the Fairfax County line from Van Dorn Street area of Alexandria. It's technically in Springfield, I guess. Anyway, I had to live with HOAs, and I would never live in an HOA again if I had a choice. I may not have a choice. But as far as I'm concerned, and also as far as every member of HAM's for action is concerned, if we could wave a magic wand and make HOAs disappear, we would. This is sort of a question of, well, what do we do while we're waiting for the millennia? Where do we start? But I think that in HAM's for action, I feel very comfortable to say that, you know, all of our members would probably support abolishing HOAs completely.
Well, I've been hearing from some of your members, and I think you're right. I think a lot of them would like to have HOAs gone, as would a lot of people.
Actually, maybe that's a good segue into legislative action in the future.
Let's take just a second for a station ID. You're listening to Fairfax Radio, coming to you from sunny, warm, and overly developed Fairfax, Virginia. And we are talking to Don Shelhart, who is an attorney, and he's president of HAMS for Action. And they're trying to get some sense across to the legislators, but you haven't had much luck, have you? Don, have you?
Yeah, I'm losing you for a second. What did you just say?
I said you haven't had much luck educating the numbskulls in Washington.
No. In fact, we had a period where we actually tried to deal with the HOAs directly. We tried to get the FCC to rule in our favor, Federal Communications Commission, and they didn't. So for a while, we tried dealing with the Community Associations Institute directly.
That must have been fun.
Well, they were very friendly. I mean, I have to admit, they were very respectful. They were very friendly. They didn't help us at all.
Absolutely, they were
very respectful. And I mean, it was pleasant dealing with them. And one thing that did impress me is they basically gave us the microphone. They said, if you write up an article saying why HOAs should bend with hands to accommodate hands, we'll put it in the National Community Association Institute newsletter. You can talk directly to the HOA managers. And so, I put that article in. They wrote up a little article with their perspective that we sent to our members. And it was a decent swap. The only thing is, talking directly to the HOA managers did no good at all.
Of course not, because
if you can talk them anywhere, it's fine with us. You know, they're our bosses. If you can get them to go along, that's fine. So I am grateful to them for giving us, you know, the microphone or the megaphone or whatever you want to call it. But the bottom line was the HOAs were absolutely deaf. I mean, they already disagreed with us, presumably. They never responded at all.
Because
we kind of checked that off our list. And, you know, at this point, we're looking at Congress. I mean, we're saying, you know, the FCC isn't going to help us. The HOA managers themselves are not going to help us. The only people who can get action on this are Congress.
Don.
Is Congress.
Don, yeah. Who is CAI? It's the managers and the attorneys, and they won't have something to enforce and someone to go after and someone to fine and someone to abuse and use if they didn't have these rules. They're not going to do away with them. They don't care whether the members are safe. They don't care whether there's a means of communication. In fact, they try to thwart communication at every turn. So if you had talked to me first, I'd have said, that's a nice try, but don't waste your time. And when you told me you'd been in touch with them, I just burst out laughing because I know what the result is going to be.
Well, one thing is it gave us a good story to tell Congress because, you know, the first thing you hear when you go to Congress typically with a problem, they'll ask you, have you tried to solve it yourself? Have you gone through the regulatory agency? you know, instead of bothering us. And in this case, it probably would say, have you gone to the HOAs? So we now have a track record where we can say, yes, we tried the FCC, and we tried the FCC, and we tried the FCC, and we tried talking to the HOAs directly. If Congress doesn't solve this, nobody is going to solve it. So, I mean, there is some political advantage in being able to say, yeah, we touched all the bases.
Yeah.
No, we went through all the preliminaries.
I understand that.
Yes. I mean, it's just a matter of practical politics. And in fairness to the people in Congress, I've been a congressional staffer myself. I've held two jobs on Capitol Hill. And they are very, very busy people. Now, maybe some of the things they're busy with are not that wise or productive, but they are busy. And so if they can find a, typically, if they can find a way to pass the buck to a regulatory agency or pass the buck to a private, you know, private entity, they'll do it. So I think it is important to be able to go to them and say, yeah, we did our homework. We tried the alternative routes. Or in legal terms, we have exhausted our administrative remedies. Anyway, I didn't mean to get on it. I do want to take a minute to mention a couple of congressional legislators who have been helpful to us.
Okay.
Because it's an election year, and, well, I guess neither of the senators are on the ballot this year, but the House members are. The first one I want to thank is Representative Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas. She's from the Houston area. She sponsored legislation which got into a bigger bill requiring the FCC to study whether HOAs were impeding emergency communications by banning ham radio antennas. The FCC came back and said they weren't. Factually, their report is extremely debatable. But anyway, that was the report. But at least they made the report because Sheila Jackson Lee in the House of Representatives sponsored that legislation. And after she dropped a bill in the House, the legislation was sponsored on the Senate side by Senator Joseph Lieberman, Democrat of Connecticut. He's not seeking re-election, so he'll be gone next session of Congress, but I still want to give him a thank you for backing the bill. Also on the bill was Senator Susan Collins, a Republican of Maine, and I want to thank her for her support. She's not on the ballot this year, but so far as I know, she will be seeking re-election, so I want people to make note of that. So those three names I wanted to mention. I also wanted to mention, particularly since you are based in Northern Virginia for your over-the-air broadcasts, I wanted to mention a Washington area congressman named Bob Bartlett. And he's a Republican from Maryland. He represents Frederick County and so on. And he hasn't helped specifically on HOA antenna reforms, but he has helped to end the HOA authority to ban flags and some other stuff like that. He's been trying to get the HOAs to end their bans on solar energy and wind energy. And so I do want to, even though he's not supporting Hands for Action on this specific issue, I do want to give him a thank you as well. I should mention, too, that I don't agree with Senator Lieberman at all on the idea of attacking Iran. And with Congressman Bartlett, I generally disagree with his voting record. However, he's much more conservative than I am. But I do think that when somebody does something praiseworthy, they should be praised for it. And these four people I've mentioned, two of whom are on the ballot this year, really deserve a thank you for taking on a cause that has very little popular support at this time. I mean, they did what they did because they thought it was the right thing to do. They knew they weren't going to get a lot of votes out of it.
And unfortunately, there have been some really good legislators, state legislators, who have not been reelected and not moved on because they have taken the side of the homeowners. And frankly, it is, you know, you can't negotiate your rights in an HOA. I mean, you do have rights. And to say that you're going to be trying to find the balance and trying to negotiate all this stuff is just ridiculous. I don't go for it at all.
Well, in terms of the immediate future, right now Hands for Action is discussing whether to try to press for a bill focused only on ham antennas in the lame duck session of Congress. That's a real long shot. But there is the possibility that if we could get, say, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee interested, some even Senator Lieberman interested in responding to this FCC study with legislation telling the FCC to override the antenna bans, if we could get that introduced in the lame duck session of Congress, there's a remote possibility it could be rolled into some bigger bill. It's definitely a long shot. On the other hand, what have we got to lose by asking?
Yeah, no, I think go for it. Absolutely go for it.
What's holding us up right now is not so much whether we should ask for it, but exactly what we should ask for. We're still going through the details of negotiation, discussions internally on that. But we will probably be proposing something to Representative Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas, Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut, and Senator Susan Collins of Maine. Now, looking out to the next session of Congress, what we have to decide at Hands for Action is whether we want to continue to seek relief just on the ham radio antennas, or whether we want to support a broader bill that will reform HOAs on a more comprehensive front. And that kind of goes, the tactics of that go, they get kind of iffy, but philosophically, everyone in HFA supports doing everything we can to reduce the powers of HOAs. So we have discussed with a few other HOA reformers who aren't hams the possibility of a sort of coalition that includes action on ham antennas, but includes action on other things as well. And the sort of tactical call is, what's going to be more marketable politically? Two separate bills, one for HOA reform generally, and one on ham antennas, or a single bill that includes ham antennas but covers more ground. And I think right now the consensus is probably moving toward one big bill. I mean, you're not going to get one big bill through a lame duck session of Congress. It's just too much weight to carry. But in terms of the next session of Congress, we might do that.
Is it better to get one big bill than a lot of smaller bills?
Well, that's where it's a tough tactical call. You know, it's totally tactical. In terms of what's good public policy, we'd rather have one big bill. The question is it easier to get through a lot of little bills or one big one? And if you know, just tactically. And if you have a lot of little bills, the advantage is that since you're going after the enemy piecemeal, you may be able to get little pieces, little reforms through that don't upset them enough to get really mobilized, don't upset the other side enough to get really mobilized. If you go for one big bill, you are definitely going to have the CAI and the Real National Association of Realtors and all these other people lined up against you. So it's an argument both ways. There's the old Communist Party saying that the way you eat a sandwich is one bite at a time.
I thought that's how you ate an elephant.
That's how you eat it. I'm sorry, you're right, an elephant. You eat an elephant one bite at a time. And, you know, I mean, they apply that in practice, you know. We're not going to try to grab all of Europe at once. We'll take Bulgaria, and then we'll take Poland, and then, you know. And that's kind of how they worked, and they finally did get stopped, thank God. But that was their basic strategy, one country at a time. So, you know, maybe that's the best strategy for us. But the point is, if you have one big bill, then you're probably going to get a lot more opposition. On the other hand, you may get a lot more support because, you know, right now we basically have support from hams, some of the hams, not even all the hams go along with us, but partly because many of the hams are not in HOAs. The hams that live in HOAs, I think, are on our wavelength. But the ones that live outside the large metropolitan areas and don't have HOAs to to worry about are, well, less supportive than we'd hoped. But so we've got, we may not be getting much opposition on a hams-only bill, but we're not going to get that much support either. If we go for the big bill, then maybe everybody with any kind of a gripe against HOAs will get on board. So you have more of a, you know, Armageddon situation. You know, the realtors and the HOAs on one side and maybe all the concerned homeowners on the other.
Problem is getting the concerned homeowners activated. They don't seem to understand the issues. They see things very much from their own perspective. They're not able to see the big picture. And they just, their world is limited by what's, you know, right in front of their noses. They don't see the big picture. And that's been a big frustration.
Well, frankly, that's one of the reasons we ended up with the bite-sized approach, is because we found a lot of times that when we were talking, and, you know, we didn't do this enough that I can really make a definitive statement about it. We all found out, you know, we often found that, oh, some homeowner was upset because they couldn't put up a solar energy panel.
Yeah.
They didn't care whether their neighbor could put up a ham antenna.
Right, absolutely.
And the one who was less concerned about putting up a ham antenna might not be concerned with whether somebody else could put up a clothesline.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're talking about energy efficiency and, you know, and the HOAs are banning clotheslines. I used to date a woman from rural, came originally from rural Ireland, County Tipperary, and she just couldn't get over that clotheslines were illegal.
Yeah.
It saves so much money. It saves energy. You know, why on earth would they be illegal in HOAs? Because they're stupid.
Yeah.
But they're not looking further than their nose. So anyway, so that's kind of the political problem. And in fact, this might be a good place to give everybody my my email number if they want to talk to me. DJSLaw, because I'm a lawyer, @gmail.com. DJSLaw@gmail.com. And if you wouldn't mind, maybe you could put it on your website when you're announcing this show.
And if anybody writes to me, I can always forward it to you.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. But basically, we would love to, well, first of all, we'd love to hear from other hams who may not be fully aware of how much we need their help. And that some hams and HOAs are just giving up, they're breaking the rules. You know, they're putting the antennas in the drain pipes. You know, but I'd like to hear from them. But secondarily, I'd like to hear from people who aren't hams at all, but either are concerned about getting emergency communications in their neighborhoods, or might be willing to join a coalition for broadly based reform. Because I think, you know, in the long run, there's a very good chance that we're all going to have to be in this together if any of us are going to get out of it.
You know, Don, when the first time you came on years ago,
yeah. And
I heard from Nick, and he'd seen the article in the Washington Post, and, you know, he started writing to me about hams, and I just couldn't see hams, and I'm thinking, people are losing their homes to foreclosure. Kids are being harassed and abused. They're not allowed to be out. You've got these mini dictators running up and down the street, you know, just abusing homeowners. Why am I so, you know, wrapped up with hams? You want to get on there? Do it. Just do it. And it took Nick a long time, but he's extremely persuasive.
And he's also extremely stubborn.
Well, he convinced me that I really needed to talk to you. And you came on the show, and we talked about ham radio. And at the time, I don't think you were a ham. I think you were just...
No, I became one later on. I was just attracted to it because I worry about disasters, including man-made disasters. And so I kind of, you know, I got it. First, I wanted to support emergency communications, and from there, I moved down to wanting to support ham specifically. Right, go ahead, anyway. Sorry.
But anyway, after that initial show, I heard from a lot of hams all over the country. And for a long time, I heard from them. they wrote, they got involved, but their passion was ham radio. And then one by one, they went out, some of them bought houses outside of HOAs, and they dropped, like everybody else, they dropped out. It no longer affected them, so they dropped out. Please take me off your mailing list. I no longer live in an HOA. I no longer am interested in the topic. So that's what typically happens in this road, but it is going to come a point where there's nowhere to run. You're not going to be able to get out of it.
Let me mention two things that we sort of passed over here. First of all, we've been talking about Nick, and the listeners may be wondering who he is. His name is Nicholas Leggett. He's in Reston, Virginia. And if you want to contact him, he's at leggett3@gmail.com. leggett3@gmail.com. And he's been a ham radio operator forever. He started off wanting to be a ham radio operator forever, and then he moved into an HOA because he couldn't find any place in Northern Virginia that didn't have an HOA, and he's been off the air ever since, thanks to the HOA regulations. So anyway, if you want to talk about ham radio or about HOAs in general, he's another good guy to talk to. The second thing I wanted to mention, we're focused mainly on HOAs, but HSA, Hams for Action, does support also allowing the 3-foot window antennas in apartments. So I just want to flag that. I mean, your listeners may not care about that. But the point is, right now, you've got cities like New York where almost everybody is in an apartment, whether it's a condominium or a rental unit. And if you have apartments able to ban all ham antennas, including the little 3-foot window jobbies, essentially you're leaving the whole city more vulnerable than it has to be. So anyway, I did want to put in that plug.
Does the OTARDS not cover that?
Excuse me?
The over-the-air receiving devices that the federal government passed, the OTARDs?
Oh, yes. The OTARD does affect apartments and HOAs, but it is limited basically to satellite TV reception.
It's not antennas in general.
Not antennas in general, no. Basically what happened is that the satellite TV people, primarily them, came to Congress and said, hey, these HOAs and apartments are banning the antennas, and that has the effect of keeping us out of this market. That's anti-competitive. You're giving an unfair advantage to the cable networks, and so on. And Congress bought the argument, partly because satellite TV industry has a lot more money to throw around than we do, and so there was this exception for satellite TV, but there was no exception for ham radio or any other or antennas in general. So that leaves the Congress in the rather illogical position of saying, well, you know, we think antenna reform is important when you're protecting the ability of, well, you know, when it's affecting the ability of businesses to make money. But we don't think it's important when lives are at risk. I mean, it's really a statement about American values that's kind of chilling.
That's an excellent point, Don, and that should go right at the very top.
Maybe it should. We haven't really been putting it at the top.
You know, that needs to be underscored. It needs to be put on the skyline. It needs to be have the Klieg lights out and shining a bright light on it. This is what you guys have done. I'm telling you, they're numbskulls in Washington. Anyway.
I used to be one of the numbskulls, but I've escaped to Connecticut.
No, I'm serious. I mean, you sit there and you scratch your head. You think, what the hell are they thinking about? Anyway, we're coming. We're going to be winding down. We've got about 6 minutes left.
So how many minutes?
About six. Time flies.
Oh, okay.
Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it?
Well, I do like talking about this, and I mean, in terms of my motivation, I think I'm saving lives. I mean, really, you know, there are other advantages to succeeding in this work if we ever get there. But the biggest thing I'm worried about is the next natural gas and next natural disaster or the first case of nuclear terrorism.
Yikes.
That's what I'm worried about.
Now that is serious.
Oh yeah, I mean, well, I'm not speaking for Hams for Action on this one, but I do think it's coming. I don't think you can get that genie back, nuclear genie back in the bottle. That's my personal opinion, and I think you can reduce the risk, but I don't think you can eliminate it.
Okay.
And so that's one reason I want our neighborhoods prepared. And also, I might as well throw this in, as long as I'm not on shaky ground, everybody worries about the homemade nuclear terrorist device. Like there's been they did a study in the Pentagon or somewhere of what happens if you fire off a 10 kiloton atomic bomb on K Street. It's 10,000 tons of TNT equivalent. But you know, there are an awful lot of old Soviet nuclear weapons lying around. And I worry that one of them is going to get sold on the black market. And instead of having a 10,000 ton of TNT explosion in Washington, you're going to have a 20 million tons of TNT explosion in Washington. And in that case, everything will be, the infrastructure will be so blown that ham radio will be all we have for probably a long time in the affected areas. And so that's my personal nightmare. An H-bomb in Washington, an H-bomb in New York, everything gone except the hams. And I think that day could happen. I don't mean to be a prophet of doom, but that's what I personally worry about. That's my biggest nightmare.
That's a sobering thought. That's a very sobering thought.
And we're acting like, I don't know, you know, I think we can go start a war with Iraq to fight terrorism, but we can't restrict the ability of HOAs to interfere with self-defense. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. We'll send tens of thousands of troops to Iraq. We'll spend $1 trillion on wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, at least partly to prevent nuclear terrorism. But we won't step on the tiniest toes of the HOAs. That is a really sense of priorities. And you look at it, I mean, sometimes I just look at our society and think, which one are we committing suicide? You know, we are making choices that leave us much more vulnerable than we have to be, and we're spending huge amount of monies on aggressive solutions and nothing on defensive solutions. What's cheaper, having 100,000 new hams in this country or waging war on Iraq or starting a war with Iran?
Two minutes, Don.
Okay. Anyway, that's enough.
We don't deal with world wars on this show.
Okay, I can only take so much. That's my personal vision. HFA. I'm not speaking for HOAs. I mean HFA. That's my personal nightmare.
I think the nightmare would be that HOAs would have something to do with keeping peace in the world. That.
Well, they do.
That's not
everything
funny.
Is connected.
So anyway, hams for action.
You can contact me anytime about hams or HOAs generally. DJSlaw@gmail.com.
Okay. And so you're going back to, Congress?
Well, I have to get the hams for action to say, okay, but I think we are probably going to try to get Representative Jackson Lee and a few others to sponsor a bill in the lame duck session of Congress that might slip through as a rider in a bigger bill. That's a long shot, but like, what have we got to lose? For next year, I think we're probably going to ask for something, but we haven't decided yet whether it will be one big bill or another hams-only bill.
Okay, so, and you will be working with the hams to make that decision, right?
Yes.
And that sounds.
And we can use all the support we can get, folks. If you want to volunteer time or money, let me know.
Okay. How about writing something up? Make it short, Don. People aren't going to read a whole lot that's really long. But write something up and put down some of the really good points that you made today on the show. And I'll put it up on my website.
Okay. I will do that. It may take a couple of days because I have a big backlog of unwritten stuff.
That's okay.
But I will get it to you within, say, within a week.
Take your time. And just the very salient points of why this should happen, and we'll put it up on the website.
And just on one thing on the nuclear terrorism, that's kind of an extreme scenario, but even if you throw that, you know, to one side, we're going to have a big one, another big earthquake in California. It's just a question of when. We're going to have a big earthquake in the Pacific Northwest, probably offshore with a tidal wave. It's only a question of when. We're going to have hurricanes again, big hurricanes. I mean, there are a whole lot of reasons, apart from nuclear terrorism, why we need communications that can operate no matter what.
Thanks, Don. Thanks for joining. And thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.